I've never had sex this good.
I don't think anyone has, Maya.
How nice of you to say when you didn't even get an orgasm out of it. I tip back my head, wipe the backs of my hands over my face.
I don't need to.
You don't need anything or anyone, do you? That's smart. And I am a fucking idiot. I slip on my top. For the last 3 years, I thought that there was a key to solving you. That if I learned the right steps, if I performed the right way, you'd stop lying to both of us and accept what we already were. But now, I let out a bitter laugh. You just admitted to jerking off to Little House on the Fucking Prairie fantasies with me. You held onto a keepsake for 3 years, and I could probably force you to acknowledge that you're in love with me, but I spread my arms wide. It means nothing. It doesn't matter how much you love me, because in your head, I'll always be too young and stupid.
Not stupid.
To know my own feelings. I'm too loud. I don't care. You will never stop seeing me as a little girl who wants you because of some misplaced daddy issues. Guess what, Connor? I'm not yours to set free. I am free, and I have chosen you freely over and over again, but you hate yourself too much to allow that. Deep down, you don't believe that you are worthy of love, and you are so terrified of having me and hurting me that you would rather spend the rest of your life giving me things I never asked for just to keep me at a distance. I don't need you to make me come 5 times. I don't need you to build my furniture. I don't need you to vet all the physicists turned quants at Harkness, find the one that's safest and most eligible, and send him my way. I don't need fucking grand gestures, and I don't need you to manage me like I'm one of your assets, Connor. I just need you to... The stream of my tears smears the lamplight around him like a halo. I'm stripping back my skin for him, showing the raw, mangy parts of me, and he just looks at me. His face mostly shadows. His expression is impossible to make out. All I ever wanted was to love you and make you happy. All I ever asked was for you to try to do the same. I was willing to be patient and kind and figure it all out together. But you... I shake my head, wipe my cheeks with my forearms, and leave. I'm halfway up the stairs when I hear the sound of something shattering into 1,000 pieces. Chapter 37. Jade, I saw the news. Has the lava phagocytized you within its toasty embrace yet? Maya, I wish. The knocks at the door hit my ears like gunshots. The room is dark, but the bluish tinge coating the walls tells me that it's no longer the middle of the night. At some not-so-distant point, all my turning and tossing must have contorted into a restless sleep. My phone says 5:13, and when I open the door, I find my brother. He wears the same impatient expression I remember from my early teens, when I took too long to pick my breakfast in the cereal aisle.
You okay?
He asks. My eyes burn with exhaustion and too many tears. They must be bloodshot, because Eli frowns.
Hangover?
Yeah, sure.
Power through it. I need you.
Now? It's 5 and the... Shit, is Tiny okay?
Yes.
Is someone sick? Wait, are you okay?
Yes, I just need you to come with me.
Why?
Maya.
He leans forward, both hands warm on my shoulder, and gives me another well-known look. Just do as I say.
Put something on and come to the first floor. You have 5 minutes.
I end up needing 7, set back by the teeth brushing. When I walk downstairs, dawn has yet to break, but no one has bothered to turn on the light in the foyer. My brother is there, Rue on one side, Tiny on the other. Across from them, Connor.
Perfect.
Eli claps his hands, slides an arm around Rue's shoulders, and disappears outside. What's going on? I ask Connor.
No clue.
And yet, he looks considerably less frazzled than I feel. His hair is a little tousled, but his plain black t-shirt and jeans are crisp. His expression is unreadable behind his dark lenses. I almost say, there are lots of misnomers in the English language, Connor, but sunglasses are, in fact, glasses that should be used when the sun is out. I don't, though. Because, what is the point? Connor is always going to withhold a huge chunk of himself, and I'm always going to resent him for it. I refuse to play more games. Clearly, he was right all along, and distance is the only way for us. If this is about Biddy, I say after a few minutes, once the four of us are in the red Fiat, Connor and me in the back seat, sandwiching Tiny. If you woke me up before sunset because something happened to him and you want me to help you bury him beachside and decorate the grave with seashells, Eli snorts.
Maya, be for real. You would totally help us.
Of course I would. But I'd also need to cry approximately 3 hectoliters of tears, which would interfere with my shovel skills. I'd rather know it beforehand.
No one's sick, dying, or getting interred. We're just going to a nice place. Matter of fact, we're here. And there's our friend.
He parks on an empty side street next to a beat-up Fiesta that must belong to the man smoking a cigarette on the sidewalk. His polo and khakis look rumpled, and I'm starting to wonder exactly how many people my brother plucked out of bed this morning. But when Eli holds out his hand, the man shakes it with a smile. Who's this guy? I ask.
Salvatore,
Eli says. And you know him from...
Soccer camp in Central Texas.
I roll my eyes. Right.
Salvatore here doesn't speak English, but he works for the town of Taormina. And he's going to open up this beautiful park for us.
What park? I nearly ask, but we turn the corner and there is Villa Comunale in all its morning splendor. I read about it in my guidebook, this public garden that's mysterious and romantic, full of monuments and botanical wonders. I even made a note to ask Rue whether she'd like to explore it with me. Of course, I meant to organize a trip during regular hours. I did not expect to watch Salvatore produce a brass keyring that would make a 19th century prison warden weep with joy and then unlock a set of tall gates. The hinges protest, as if bothered by the early hours, when he pushes them open, then closed again behind us. We start upward, footsteps light on the stone pathways. I ask, Eli, how did you even get this poor man to come out at this hour?
Money.
They all say in unison. That would be the answer, yeah. I sigh. But even my cynical heart can't help being taken by the beauty around us. Westward, in the distance, the imposing silhouette of Mount Etna continues to sputter. The smoke column is no lower than yesterday, but the wind seems to be carrying it in the direction opposite to Taormina. It means that if we turn east, we can forget about the ashy grumblings and focus on the first taste of sunrise. It's a much more pedestrian occurrence than a volcanic eruption, but I'm in awe when the first tangerine hues begin to form, splitting the petrol green of the ocean from the dark blue of the sky. It takes my breath away. Is this some kind of exclusive tour? I ask Connor. After last night, I'd love nothing more than a break from him, but I'm too confused by the situation to implement any sort of silent treatment. We've fallen behind as we rise through the terraces, climbing stairways. We lag after Salvatore's assured steps and Rue and Eli's too cheerful handholding. Tiny runs back and forth between groups, looping around our legs, discovering sticks, bringing them for us to throw, forgetting to fetch them and running into the bushes to find new ones. The place teems with towering cypresses, oleanders, the ever-present bougainvillea, which are everywhere in Texas, and will forever remind me of the heartbreak of this week. Between the palms, I spot elaborate follies and make a mental note to return to them later, once the sun is out and the light has strengthened.
I don't think it's a tour, no.
Connor says. What then? We've made it as high as we can go, the tallest level of the park. Here, the morning glow bathes the greenery in warm, reddish gold.
If it's what I think...
Connor shakes his head, and when his phone vibrates, he turns it off. His eyes are still covered, but the little webs at the corners suggest amusement.
Damn, he's smooth.
Salvatore?
Connor's laughter is a warm, fond sound that makes my stomach flutter. So I turn away from it, hurrying after the others toward the panoramic view. The sunrise is spectacular from here. Maybe we're headed for that pergola. Rue stops, so abruptly it takes Eli a beat to realize it. She leans over the balustrade and for a moment, at the gentle start of the morning, cocooned by the bird songs, long shadows stretching behind her, I remember meeting her for the first time. How beautiful and luminous and incomprehensible she seemed. I blame it on my sluggish, bleary, rudely awakened eyes that it took me so long to realize that what she's wearing is not a sundress at all, but a man's button-down. A white tuxedo shirt long enough to be Eli's, tails draping down to her upper thighs. The breeze runs past her, rumples her black hair, rustles through the leaves. Pollen and honey perfume in the air. Right behind her, I see yet another jasmine bush, still in bloom. Eli watches Rue watch the water, an unusual shine to his eyes.
Here?
He asks at last. She smiles. Facing straight ahead, she nods. Here. My brother pulls her into him and they kiss. They kiss and kiss and it doesn't... This one moment looks like something that I should not be witnessing. Connor seems to be of the same mind, and we lock eyes. I think I get it, I whisper. What's happening? His lips twitch.
Yeah?
Do you think?
So?
Eli says in his loud hockey team MVP voice. His grin is not his regular one. This might be the happiest I've ever seen my brother.
Thank you for coming. Both of you.
I bite back a smile. You practically abducted us.
Yeah, well, you needed abducting, Maya. Rue and I talked about it, and we decided that you were the only person we couldn't do this without.
I blow out an exaggerated sigh. Fine, I'm going to give you a kidney.
And hark.
He turns to Connor.
You are my best man. And my oldest friend.
A smirk plays on Connor's lips.
But that's not why I'm here, is it? Nope.
Eli points at Salvatore, who's staring at his empty cigarette pack with a desolate expression.
I need you to explain to this government official that he needs to marry Rue and me. Right now, with the fastest ceremony he is capable of.
2 days before the wedding. Scratch that. The day of the wedding. Chapter 38. They kiss right as the sun emerges from the water. A truly cinematic moment that would have made for a perfect picture. No one takes any, but it doesn't matter. Neither Eli nor Rue will ever forget.
We just want to be married,
Eli told us, at once deeply relieved and outrageously happy.
I need to be married to her. Everything else, I'm sure there was a time when I gave a fuck, but that's so long gone, I can't even recall it. I'm ready for this woman to be legally mandated to never leave my side.
Not how the law works, Rue murmured, unfazed.
Until the day we both die in our sleep, surrounded by our immortal dogs and millions of plants.
Connor and I exchanged a look, then a smile. Then he said,
Solid choice. I approve. Signor Salvatore.
I watch Rue's arms close around Eli's neck, but the glare of the rising sun turns them into little more than contours, dark shapes against the horizon. Maybe this is what relationships are. How people's lives unfold. Opaque from the outside, the layers and depths impossible to grasp. I will never fully understand Rue and Eli's odd, mismatched love, but they fought for it. They made this happen, this happiness. It didn't just fall into their lap. They compromised, and it all happens at once. Tears streak my cheeks. Connor's arm draws me into the warmth of his chest.
Hush,
he murmurs against my hair.
It's all good.
Rue and Eli break apart. My brother beams, looks in our direction as if to say, Maya, hark, did you see this? Did you see me marry her? Do you see my wife? Rue, though, tugs at his hand, asking for one more second of his undivided attention. Just, she says, and it's so oddly out of character for her. The hesitation, the way her voice carries to us. Thank you for not giving up on me, even though I had given up on me. Eli's reply is an extended murmur in her ear. The tears rear back, flooding my eyes.
That's not like you,
my brother tuts, turning in my direction.
Bawling at a wedding.
I wipe my cheek with the heel of my hand. I'm not bawling.
Of course not, pumpkin.
He hasn't called me that. God, since I was 12, maybe. Dad's funeral. Gently, he coaxes me out of Connor's arms and into his own. I'm so happy for you. I don't know why I'm making such a scene. It's just, things were so shitty for a while, and we were so alone, and I'm really, really happy that you have this.
I know.
His palm travels up and down my back, and then it's Rue's turn, which doesn't happen a lot. In fact, it may be our first hug. She's much taller than I am, and despite her softness, there is something rigid about this. A sense of discomfort on her part. It makes me love her even more. I'm sorry about coming to your wedding in my overalls with little strawberries embroidered on them. If Eli had told me where we were going, I'd have worn my tripod shirt. She pulls back, but holds on to my hand. A smile tugs at her lips. The second best thing about meeting Eli is that it led to you becoming my family. Second after Tiny, or second after Eli? She considers it. May I amend my previous statement? Third, huh? She nods somberly, kisses me on the forehead, and I think my heart explodes. Next to us, Connor and Eli just exchange one of those one-armed hugs, even as Tiny tries to get right between them.
Congrats on not letting a natural disaster fuck with your wedding, man.
Then we're all heading back down, the trip much less quiet this time around. Salvatore leaves the gates of the park open before leaving, explaining something about how time is not so important in Italy. When the others head for the car, I stay behind. Hey, is there a party planned for when we get back to the villa? I ask. Eli and Rue turn to each other and never look away. Gross, guys, I laugh. Get a room, please.
That's precisely what we're about to do.
Okay, well, since you're going to be breaking headboards or something, I'll stay here. Explore the Follies. Eli frowns.
Would it be dangerous? There aren't many people out yet. I'll stay, too.
Connor reassures him.
Hark, you sure? Yeah, we can walk back to the villa.
I wave goodbye to my brother and Rue. Seeing them happy just cycled me through a lot of emotions, and my anger at Connor is not forgotten, but set aside, blunted to a dull pain that comes from defeat and resignation, from finally acknowledging that I'm going to move forward without him. Maybe he was the love of my life. No, I am certain that he was. But happy endings are not the rule. Sometimes you give it your all, and things still don't turn out well. Sometimes A for effort looks just like an F in a funhouse mirror. It's okay. I've survived a lot of bad shit, and I know the trick to pull through. Breathe. Just breathe. And then breathe again. I'm gonna check out the Follies, I tell him once the Fiat has driven past us. I know you were just trying not to worry Eli. You don't need to stay. I wait for his face to flood with the relief that, for the first time in years, I'm not chasing him. I'm not flirting, or charming him, or attempting to lure him to my general proximity. But he's still wearing those damn sunglasses. In the brightening light, I'm actually a bit envious. I have my phone with me in case anything happens, I add. Connor says nothing. Moves closer, though, catching me off guard. I take an instinctive step back, even as my chin tilts up to him. Seriously, I say. It's fine. Silence. And I frown, confused. I spy intent in the set of his jaw, serious determination in the angle of his cheekbone. But he's looming, little room between us, and if only I could see his eyes, then maybe I would understand. This feels like another game, and I'm all played out. I'm sorry, Connor. I'm really tired, and frankly, I'd love to be alone for... He kisses me. He leans forward, takes my head in his warm hands, then... His lips are pressing against mine, and he kisses me. It's hard, and also sweet. Open-mouthed and lingering and a little messy. And if someone had asked me to take a guess, to say what a kiss from Connor Harkness would be like, I would have described this one. Endless. Careful. Deep. He coaxes my mouth into opening wider, then licks the inside of it like this is all he wants from me. I strain upward all tendons and shaky muscles, feel his body brush against mine rock hard, muscles and heat and safety, the scent of his skin mixing with the flowers in the air. Out of all the lucid dreams my brain could have conjured, this one is the cruelest. But I don't wake up. He kisses me forever. And even when he stops, his hands stay around my face, in my hair. I blink. The world is the same as it was before, but the corners are not quite as sharp. A kinder, gentler place where breathing is easier. I might be going mad.
Maya!
Connor's voice is deep enough to reverberate through my bones. It reshapes me from the inside.
Everything you said last night was right, and...
He breaks off, shakes his head. The hand grasping the back of my neck lets go, and finally he's taking those damn sunglasses off, and I can see that in his gaze there's... Oh. Oh. All of... that.
I'm doing it wrong all over again.
His throat works.
I should have led with the only thing that matters.
Which is? I hear myself ask, surprised at my ability to form words. He brushes his thumb over my lower lip, and says,
I love you, Maya. And no, it's never going to pass.
Chapter 39. Was that so hard to say? I ask him after. And it's not easy, breaking away from him and meeting his eyes, demanding answers, not slipping down the path of teasing, where we've already left so many worthless tracks. I deserve to know. 3 years of this, 10 months of nothing. I need him to tell me what took him so damn long.
Yeah, it was.
He looks sad, regretful. But there is a calm, intense, clear determination in his dark gaze. It squeezes something inside me, but I roll my eyes anyway, glance away. 3 sparrows land on the tallest folly, their chants lost in the breeze.
I'd never said it before.
It was not your first time saying I love you.
No.
Connor smiles in the slow morning light.
It was my first time meaning it.
The shadows shorten. Mid-morning heat washes over me, boils my skin, turns the lemon water I buy into a mess of near-melted plastic that I end up guzzling, then tossing away. Connor looks fresh, as immaculate as always, but a sheen of sweat has begun to form under the fabric of his shirt, sticking it to the stretch of muscles between his shoulder blades. Impossible to spot, but I feel it when I tap his back to point at a narrow alleyway. An overwrought sigh.
Sure, let's climb more stairs.
But he loves the ivy-curtained walls as much as I do, the colorful pots full to the brim with firecracker peppers and prickly pears. His happiness sits at the corner of his mouth, crinkles in the fine web of lines splitting from his eyes. Because I am wearing his sunglasses. We don't have to, if your knee joints are too fatigued, old man. He pulls me in under his arm. Even though my skin is tacky and I can't recall if I put on deodorant, I let him.
What?
He asks halfway through the staircase when he notices me grinning up at him. Nothing. Just... He stops, bends in to kiss me. First on the tip of my nose, then lingering on the lips. And I think, just.
Try it.
He tells me in the middle of exploring the bustling market after overpaying a local seller for a single branch of cherry tomatoes. No way.
Try it.
He repeats. I pout. His knuckles are right there, brushing against my lower lip. How did my life go from a traditional Sicilian gelato breakfast to this?
This kind of attitude toward fresh produce won't get you far in life.
What? I love fresh produce. Some of my best friends are fresh produce. All I'm saying is it has a time and a place. But he's holding it out to me, the red of vivid scarlet, inviting, tempting. Maybe my body could stand some nutrients. Fuck me, I grunt, chewing. Are you kidding me?
What did I tell you?
I hate you. I pop another one in my mouth. It's so sweet. He pushes a strand of hair behind my ear, watches me polish off the rest of the branch with a satisfied, smug expression that has me poking his flank.
And what have we learned?
He asks. That we should respect our elders? His eyes narrow.
That it's always a good time for fresh produce, trouble.
I laugh. If someone came to me and pried my chest open, they would see light beaming out of it. I've always liked sex. Kissing? Too variable. Inconclusive. Above all, it's much harder to instruct a man on how to kiss properly than on how to fuck. That's probably why I used to be on the fence about it. Connor convinces me otherwise in just a few hours. Then we have lunch on a second-floor balcony of a restaurant just off Corso Umberto. It's a nice place, a little fancy, and I'm worried that the strawberry embroidery will get me kicked out, but they must not care. Or maybe Connor has worn so many pairs of cufflinks in his life, it's paying forward. So, I say at the end of the meal, cantaloupe and prosciutto and soft cheese, arugula, crispy focaccia, Aperol spritz. Is this our first date? That's the thing of sitting across from each other. No kissing. No turning away. No way for him to ignore my signature difficult questions. Not that he would have. At least going by how laid back his posture remains, hand relaxed on the table.
I don't know,
he says, sounding just as curious as I am.
Would you like this to be our first date?
Would you like it to be our first date? He mulls it over.
Honestly, no.
I wait for my stomach to start churning, but it doesn't happen. I feel remarkably secure about all of this. He said he loves me, which means that an explanation must be forthcoming.
It's a very American concept,
he continues. What is?
Dating. I'm sure it's popularized in Europe too by now. Apps and media. And I know that at this point I've lived longer in the US than in Europe, but my formative years were here. And the idea of a formal framework to guide people as they attempt to assess whether they are a good fit romantically is a little too much like a corporate deck.
Says Austin's Entrepreneur of the Year. He shrugs.
It's awkward, too. People try to put forward their best traits, but a lot is at stake, and they are nervous, which is counterproductive. It's the trial run nature of it. Like there's something to prove, a new level to graduate to. The need to discover whether a sub-effective dose of someone you barely know might be compatible with your system, then slowly increase the intake. See if your organism tolerates it. It's the kind of shit you do to get accustomed to poisons.
Okay, so how do you do it in Ireland? Or did, anyway?
Get to know people at work or school, within a friend group. Develop an organic attraction with someone. By the time you're going out for drinks, you already know that you like each other. You do it because you want to spend time together.
I pull up my knees, distrustful, hug them to my chest. What you are saying is that you'd like for us to go on several outings with multiple chaperones, following which we might be able to do something that sounds like a date, but may not be called a date to spare your fragile European millennial sensitivities. He laughs, full of warmth.
I'm saying that I already know I'm in love with you, and that I have little interest in being apart from you. I don't need you in small doses, because I want it all.
His words wrap around me like a hug, but I don't want to give him the satisfaction of seeing what his openness does to me. Not yet, and try to bite the grin off my cheeks. The problem is, he's too close. This is too good. You realize how insane that sounds. That after years of acting like a little shit.
A little shit?
Yes, precisely like, as I said, a little shit. You have just changed your mind about us. He nods slowly. Contrite, I think.
You have every right to be apprehensive.
Apprehensive? You will have to forgive me if I suspect this to be a case of the amyloid plaques buildup doing their thing in real time. He sighs.
You're really having a field day with the aging jokes, huh?
You deserve it, since you made it your cause célèbre for this long. He can't quite swallow his smile, and neither can I. Is it because of what Rue said? I ask.
What do you mean?
This morning, when she thanked Eli for being patient with her. Is that why you changed your mind?
No, Maya, not at all. It was last night, Everything you said, I...
He shakes his head.
I think I knew all of it. The bits and pieces, when I told you that my decision to stay away from you was something that I had to renegotiate with myself every day. I didn't lie. And every day my brain would come up with new reasons, insist that maybe I could allow myself to be with you, and I'd have to talk myself out of it. I've debated us in my head 1,000 times, and I always took the side that wanted to shield you from a relationship with someone like me. And then last night, you made me realize that none of my fucking bullet points mattered. I was trying to protect you from something that you never even considered a threat. When the only thing that really matters is...
The triumph of the free market?
You.
His laugh is soft.
The unregulated market can fuck a traffic cone for all I care.
I sit back in my chair. Study him. Okay.
Okay.
Good. A slow nod.
Good.
So, I try to sound solemn, pretend there aren't fireworks blowing up all over my body. Since my brother is too busy sex marathoning his new wife to assure the preservation of my honor, you'll forgive me if I ask you a few questions.
By all means.
He gestures at me, confident. What are your intentions? A crease forms between his eyebrows.
Regarding?
Well, we're not dating, because you are too busy protesting American hegemony in all its forms and ideals. Am I your girlfriend, then? A nearly imperceptible pause.
If you want to be.
Stop saying, what would you like?
Sure. I'd love for you to be my girlfriend.
Excuse me, but that doesn't sound enthusiastic.
It is. I am.
If you just want to be fuck buddies, you can say so.
I don't. No, Maya.
I just don't understand what it is that you...
I want to get married.
All of a sudden, he's leaning forward. A challenging, burning, searching light in his eyes. I blink. Many, many times. Well.
Yeah.
A sigh.
I'd love to get married tomorrow. But you are turning 24 in 3 months, and as I have been repeating ad nauseam, I am 38. The age difference is not your fault, and you shouldn't be rushed into important milestones just because of...
Your geriatric status?
Precisely. And I don't think it's fair of me to demand a commitment of you this early on. Not after being so fucking stupid for 3 years.
He's right. I may be sick in love with him, but not so much that I cannot see it. Then?
Then we...
He runs a hand through his hair, like this is a stressful topic for him and often revisited. I wonder how many hours, days, weeks he's lain in bed awake to figure out a solution that would allow us to be together without shackling me to him.
We start back from where we left off.
My eyes widen. Last night?
No, I...
His fingers find the bridge of his nose.
I meant 10 months ago.
Oh, so we talk on the phone like it's the 90s and live on different continents?
No, or yes, if you want to. Maya, I will take as much or as little of you as you'll let me have. But I stand by what I said last night. I want you to be in charge.
Connor, my hand slides across the table, knuckles brushing against his. If it's pegging you want, you only have to ask. He hangs his head, but not before I notice his grin. When he looks up, he's serious again.
There is a power differential here. I have, and will again admit to having been a stubborn idiot when it comes to you. But to be clear, I do not think that the issues I brought up are no longer there. You remain much younger. I mean, I'd bet a good third of my assets that the waiter is currently wondering why I can't look away from my daughter.
I lean forward, spot the 20-something idling under one of the umbrellas, a bored look as he waits for the lunch crowd to swarm the restaurant. With a small smile, I twine my fingers with Connor's, lift his palm to my lips, press a kiss to the middle of it, a gentle scrape of my teeth. I think he just figured out that we're not related, I murmur. Connor shakes his head, that smile still tugging at his lips, his voice raspy as he starts again.
My point is, we do have to acknowledge that I'm older, have more life experience, and have more financial means.
I glance down at myself. Just because there's sand on my romper and I spilled granita all over it, it doesn't mean that I don't have my very own exchange-traded fund.
Right. Yes.
He's grinning again. So open, I just... My heart! It's going to stretch to the sky! He looks at the sleep-deprived mess of me, shakes his head, and says,
Granita spillage notwithstanding, you're still a bit too beautiful for my taste.
I just want to reassure you, in case your worry is that you'd be saddling yourself with the burden of someone who's younger and poor, that I do have a job lined up, and I've been financially independent for several years, and...
Maya, it's the exact opposite. I want to take care of you. I want to throw money at your problems and solve them for you. Which is why I need to be very careful not to overwhelm you.
Which is why you're stopping yourself from proposing, yeah? I take back my hand, pretending to be annoyed. I guess we'll be waiting to get started on those babies, hmm? He freezes, flushes, glances away.
Maya, I don't.
Plan to get me pregnant? He closes his eyes, mortified.
That was bad of me to say without first discussing it with you. It was...
problematic.
Yes. Maya, I would never ask you to have a baby if you weren't ready. I would never ask you to keep a baby you didn't want.
Connor, relax. You can be a fan of reproductive rights and think that coming inside me is hot. He covers his eyes.
Christ.
There's nothing to be embarrassed about. Lots of people have a breeding kink.
Fucking I don't.
Oh, Connor. Yes, you do.
Such a fucking menace.
He grumbles, red-cheeked. Adorable. It's fine. I'm into weird stuff, too.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Like what?
I believe it's called gerontophilia?
Fuck off, Maya.
I try to keep my laughter down, but it's not working. The waiter turns to us, a confused smile as he watches Connor rub his eyes, me cracking up. Just to clear the air? I whisper, leaning closer. I'm not really a gerontophile. You're the only older person I want to have sex with.
Yeah? Good.
His cheeks are still pink.
I also haven't fantasized about getting other women pregnant.
Really? He shakes his head. Never?
Never.
Did you and Minami not?
No. We were younger when we were together, even though...
He snorts.
Still older than you are right now, but she had a pregnancy scare once.
And?
It turned out that she was just late, constantly overworked and stressed out by our supervisor. But it got us thinking about families, and we talked about it. I realized that I didn't think I wanted kids.
But now you do? I try to wrap my head around it. Do you think you just weren't ready?
Maybe. Or maybe it's just that when I think about doing something with you, it feels like an adventure. Climbing a mountain, having a family, moving to another country. I don't do well with change, Maya. I'd like to control my environment and limit the unknown. But I woke up a couple of years ago and realized that you'd completely flipped that for me.
Why?
Because no matter what, or where, or when, you would make it spectacular. Whatever situation, you'd make it worth living. I'd get up and you'd be there, looking beautiful and saying the most annoying things and driving me nuts and making me laugh, and I would love every second of it. Because it's with you. And you are.
The way his lips curl is internal, like he's sorting out the thoughts in his head.
Your trouble. A constant stream of trouble.
It's my turn to lower my eyes, to take a deep breath. You know, Eli came to see me last night, before. He told me to go easy on you. Connor sighs, amused, unbothered. Do you feel, now that he finally knows, do you feel safer? Like that guardrail is finally in place?
No, I don't. I never... It was a stupid idea that the people around me could protect me from my feelings. But in my defense, for a while there, I didn't think I was in love.
My eyebrow must arch, because he continues.
It was too all-consuming, too gut-wrenching. And I thought I've been in love before. This is not what that felt like. And then I realized that I simply hadn't known what love was supposed to feel like. But I still couldn't accept the risk of being with you and screwing up your life. So I told myself that love wasn't enough. I kept moving the goalpost. I kept drawing new lines. And you asked what changed between last night and this morning. You made me realize that some lines should be left where they've been drawn. And if we move past them...
His fingers curl around my cheek, thumb brushing back and forth.
Then so be it.
The city center is beautiful, even if overrun with tourists. A rabble of unique objects everywhere I turn. Mosaics and churches, fountains and vistas, religious shrines covered in flowers, and the most gorgeous foods. Stray cats nap on their windowsill perches. Hand-painted signs beckon us toward trattorias and stores selling jewelry made of dark, volcanic stone. After lunch, Connor buys me marzipan and lemonade, and a dozen new trinkets with the tripod flag on them. It's my new favorite thing, I explain. I'm going to bring back one for everyone I know, and 5 for Jade.
You are...
What?
A deeply weird person,
he says, and then he's kissing me again, one hand on the small of my back, the other at my nape. My friend Des taught me how to haggle, I offer. I could get it cheaper.
Absolutely no.
But it's fun. He nods when I gasp, point at a street performer, say, I love this piece. Do you have any cash? I drop a few euros in the girl's violin case, then run back to the side, sinking into that one-armed hug that's no older than this morning, and yet already feels indispensable, life-sustaining. It's by one of my favorite composers.
Ludovico Einaudi.
I frown up at him. You know Ludovico Einaudi?
I know of him.
You, Mr. Industrial Techno. Clang, clang, kablam.
I contain multitudes.
You do not. You contain one genre, and it sounds like bobcats mating on top of a land drilling rig. How do you know about Ludovico Einaudi? He sighs, stares at the graceful push and pull of the bow.
You know that music app you made me download just a couple of weeks after we started talking? You wanted us to listen to a podcast about rowing together.
Oh, yeah. I do. I had to guide you through linking our accounts. I remember thinking you were a bit senile after all. His glare is contemptuous.
I may be senile, but you never realized that the app required a subscription. I signed up for it and put you on the plan, basically a joint account.
I blink, because I use that app frequently. Every day, in fact. Huh. Have you been paying for my music in addition to my birth control?
Apparently. But the way the account works, it sends me alerts, tells me what you're listening to.
Please tell me you disabled push notifications.
I could tell you, but...
Oh my God. I cover my mouth, laugh into my palm. Why?
It was nice. Sometimes I'd put on the same songs as you, and it felt almost like being together.
He shrugs. The shift of his muscles vibrates through my entire body.
I kept telling myself, I'll disconnect it tomorrow. But...
I think about the past 3 years. All the times I resolved to get over him. All the times I told myself that the next guy who asked me out, I'd accept. All the times I never did. Yeah, I say. And then I'm stretching up, pressing a kiss to his cheek, safe in the knowledge that we're both here to stay. Chapter 40. Connor and I walk inside the living room hand in hand, and that's when I realize that I'm not yet ready for the world, at least this world, to have an opinion about us. The mid-afternoon light streams through the gauzy curtains. I squeeze his fingers before freeing mine, flash him an apologetic grin, and decide to pretend that we got here at the same time by chance. After all, Eli just summoned us all via text. Fate and all that. Connor sits next to Minami, bouncing Kaida on his knee, remarkably patient as she fists her little fingers around his ears to keep her balance. From several seats down, I blow silly faces at her to make her giggle. Neota's feet on my lap. So, she asks, where were we this morning? I meet her eyes, smile, and watch her do the same. Well played, Kilgore. Thought you might be proud of me. Oh, I am. I'd buy you a new car if I wasn't sure that Daddy's already on it. When Eli and Rue arrive, they sit on the stool in front of the grand piano.
So,
he starts.
Short story short. We spent the past 48 hours trying to figure out how to get 30-something people here. Catania is not the only airport in Sicily. And we explored the possibility of boats and buses. But the domino effect of thousands of people rescheduling travel was too much. It may even be difficult to get you guys out of here. Hang on. So the wedding's off?
Axel's devastation is epic. And unexpected. That man is invested, Neota mutters. Was he in charge of the wedding trousseau or something? I think he just likes love, I shrug. No thoughts, head empty, but in a romantic way. He's a sweet boy. Man. Whatever. He'll find someone to take him in hand and we'll make for a great life partner.
The wedding is not off,
Eli reassures. His arm tightens around Rue, who leans deeper into him.
Rue and I got married.
Silence. I wonder if I should pretend to be surprised. Glance at Connor, who is smiling like he can't be bothered to fake it.
Yep, we did it without you guys in attendance. I know we lured you here under the false pretense that you'd get to witness the beginning of the rest of our lives and...
Despicable, Minami mutters dryly.
We are very sorry that we acted selfishly. Just kidding, we aren't. This wedding was a total shit show. And hearing my very rational fiancé unironically use the word curse precipitated this decision. With all due respect, y'all may fuck yourselves.
Tisha raises her hand. Will you be taking questions at this time?
Sure.
When did you get married?
Early this morning.
A chorus of groans. After a few moments, Cash is exchanging hands. Most of it flows into Neota's direction.
Thank you. Yes, thank you. Nuh-uh. Tamarin, you may pay in euros, but the exchange rate was much more advantageous to me at the time of the bet.
Ye old bastards,
Tisha mutters, opening up her Venmo app. You couldn't do it half a day later, could you? After paying up, people flock to Eli and Rue for hugs and congratulations. Axel hiccups with joy while his brother rubs his back.
Well, now I don't know what to do,
Neota mumbles, counting her cash.
What do you mean?
It's just, with no ceremony, no rehearsal dinner, no introductions to fuckable bachelors. I'm not sure that Rue worked hard enough for that Instagram follow.
I snort.
Now that you've enriched yourself off of our wedding anguish,
Eli says,
let me tell you about our plans. We'll sail for Greece in 2 days and stick around till then. The villa is available to all of you through the next week, too. Thanks to Tamarin. Stay as long as you like.
Through next year, Tamarin adds with a cheeky smile. Please, feel free to exercise your squatting rights to their full extent in my late husband's not-yet-settled real estate portfolio. Everyone laughs.
Any other questions?
Eli asks. I raise my hand.
Yes, Maya.
What about the ball pit we were promised?
He raises his middle finger at me as he leaves with Rue. I catch Connor's eyes as he hands Kaida over to Sul. I smile, and so does he. A new feeling floods me. That he and I are on the same side of an invisible line, and the rest of the world is elsewhere. Our very own Isola Bella. Sandbar accessibility subject to changes in sea levels. Honestly, Neota says, adjusting to lay her head over my shoulder. Yeah? This wedding was a fucking mess.
Yup.
And I'm no closer to becoming a rich dude's kept woman.
Nope.
But, like, it was a good week. I close my eyes, inhale the rose scent of her hair. Yeah, it was. In keeping with the rest of the week, the largest freezer in the villa comes to an untimely demise about 20 minutes later. Is this connected to the eruption? I ask when I see Lucrezia's boys schlepping heavy-looking containers onto the patio.
I highly doubt it, Avery says.
I think it's just another turbulent event in a long list of curse-precipitated occurrences.
I didn't want to put it like that, but I don't think the Greek goddess of weddings has bestowed